Welcome back to our second presentation of Chapter 17 in the 4th, 5th, and 6th editions, and Chapter 7 in the 3rd edition, if you still have that book. You're going to need the income statement and the balance sheet of Walgreens from the website, or you could go online to Yahoo or Bloomberg's or any one of those financial websites and download it, or go to the library and get it. It's up to you. And you're going to need your calculator in hand. You got your trusty calculator? Yeah? I got my... Well, actually, no. I've already done all the calculations, and I have my little cheat sheet in front of me. Ready? Let's get started. On slide 20, we're going to start with the profitability ratios. Very important ratios that are often reported. We don't even have to calculate them. And these are financial ratios that measure a firm's returns by relating profits to sales, profits to assets, profits to equity. Net profit margin, gross margin, operating margin, return on assets, and return on equity. Profitability ratios allow one to measure the ability of a firm to earn an adequate return on sales, total assets, and invested capital. So we start on slide 21 with the first one, net profit margin, sometimes called the after-tax profit margin. And this is the rate of profit being earned from earnings after expenses and taxes. So what we're doing here is we're taking the net income, the bottom line as it's often called, and relating it to the total revenue, the top line on our income statement, as it's often called, top line, bottom line. You'll hear those terms used quite a bit. And certainly the higher the better, but you have to be careful because it varies greatly from industry to industry. So I've already done the calculation. You're going to go to the income statement and find the net income for Walgreens. And did you find that? That's at the bottom line, right? And then find the total revenue, the top line. And so what numbers do you get? I got 212700, and you can just forget the zeros. You don't have to put them down. So is that 2,127,000? No, it's actually 2 billion, right? They don't even bother to show you the last three zeros. And then for total revenue, it's 71,633,000. So that's 71,633,000,000. And just cross off the last three zeros because some of your calculators don't even go up that high. And if you calculate that, you wind up with 2.97%. All right, now do it. Come on, do it. Okay. Did you get that? Good. Is that good? Is that bad? Well, I don't know. I mean, you have to go look at, right, you got to go look at CVS and Rite Aid and their competitors. And wait a minute, who else is horning in on the prescription drug? Right, the Walmarts and the Targets and the Costcos of the world. Plus, you got the grocery store chains getting in on prescription drugs, too. So you have to really cast a wide net here and see how Walgreens compares with their close competitors such as CVS and Rite Aid, and their competitors who are, you know, focused on many other things, not only just prescription drugs. And it turns out for a high volume retailer such as Walgreens, 3% is really not that bad for the net profit margin. It's not that hot, not that bad. It's pretty good. So you now run on over to Yahoo and you look at the key statistics where they publish the net profit margin and you see that it's 2.81%. And you go, wait a minute, Plyana, what's going on here? Huh? Why is it different? Well, you'll also see next to it a little TTM, trailing 12-month. You see that? Right, exactly. See, we're looking at the annual income statement, the annual balance sheet statement, and cash flow statement. But every quarter, a new one comes out. So what the analysts will do is they'll use trailing 12 months. That's what TTM stands for. So they're going back trailing 12 months from the last quarterly statement and recomputing the net profit margin. Now, it's pretty close, 2.81% as opposed to 2.97%. Does that make sense? Yeah, exactly. So, that was the net profit margin. The next one is the gross margin, excuse me. And this is looking at gross profit. And what does that mean? In other words, before you subtract out all the other things like selling, general, administrative, operating expenses, all those other things. Just looking at the gross profit. And so look at the income statement and you'll say, right, you see, exactly. That's close to the top line revenue statement. So you find for gross profit, I got 20,342,000, well, it's actually 20 billion, right? 342. And if you divide that by total revenue, then you wind up with 28.4%, which, by the way, is not bad, folks. It's pretty darn good. And again, you have to look at their competitors to compare apples to apples to see if it's in line with the rest of the industry or if it's much better or if it's much worse. Right? Yeah. The higher the better, and it varies greatly. Slide number 23, operating margin. Same idea, but instead of using the net income or the gross profit, we're going to use operating income. So further on down the income statement, you'll see operating income, and you divide that by the total revenue, and for Walgreens, you find it's 4.84%, which is fairly close to the net profit margin, right? And if you go on Yahoo, the trailing 12 months, you find that it's 4.78%. So it hasn't changed much since the new quarterly statements have come out. And yep, you guessed it. The higher the better, and it varies greatly from industry to industry. So when you are looking at a specific company, we always need to look at its competitors within the industry. When we find a company that is atypical of its competitors in an industry, it doesn't mean that, yes, we should buy it, or no, we should sell it. It is a signal that we have more investigative work to do. Yeah, makes sense. Okay, now, the next two are wildly discussed and widely disseminated, and that is return on assets and return on equity. Return on assets takes our net income and relates it to the total assets the company has on its books. So you're going to need the income statement for the net income, and we already used that. That was right 2127. Do you find that at the bottom of the income statement? And then the total assets are on the balance sheet. And I found 33462. Is that what you found? Okay, make sure you do these, because I'm going to ask you to do them. They're not that hard. And you wind up with a return on assets of 6.3%. 6.36% is what I calculated. And again, trailing 12 months are a little different, 6.75, but not that different. And we need to relate that to other companies in their industry. The return on assets looks at the amount of resources a company needs to support operations. It reveals how effective the company is in generating profits from the assets it has available. And of course, the higher the better, very popular ratio. We also take a look at slide number 25, the return on equity, sometimes called return on investment, and there's a couple other variations of this, return on invested capital. They're similar. It's very similar. They're a measure of the overall profitability of a company in relation to the shareholders' equity. In other words, of the part of the company that the company owns. Where the total assets just looks at all their assets, and the shareholders' equity just looks at all the assets minus the debt, minus the liabilities. So you take the net income and divide it by the total stockholders' equity. So can you find that on the balance sheet? I found 18,236. Is that what you found? Pause the presentation to make sure. And then again, the net income is 2,127. So we get a return on equity of 11.66% using the annual statements. But if you go to Yahoo and look at the TTM trailing 12 months, you find that we have 12.02%. Similar, a little higher. So let's read. Because return on equity uses stockholders' equity instead of total assets for the denominator, return on equity is sensitive to the amount of debt a company is carrying. Specifically, if a company carries a great amount of debt, return on equity will be much larger than return on assets. Some investors think this is a good thing. You'll hear them say, well, the company is using other people's money to make their money. And we'll discuss this idea of leverage and using debt to increase your earnings in detail later on as we go along. But that's the idea. Some investors like this. Yeah. Load up on the debt and use that money to make your money use somebody else's money. You got to pay them interest. And others, though, are worried about the possible negative consequences of too much debt. Can you service the debt? Right. So there's that tug of war. Yeah, we like to be able to use other people's money to make our money, but it doesn't come for free. We have to pay that money back eventually, and we have to pay interest on that. So those were the profitability ratios. Make sense? Do a couple, and yes, they are very simple. Now, let's take a look at liquidity ratios. Liquidity ratios. Benjamin Graham was very interested in liquidity ratios. And liquidity means, do you have enough cash on hand? That's basically what it means, right? You got enough cash? Financial ratios concerned with a firm's ability to meet its day-to-day operating expenses and satisfy its short-term obligations as they come due. And the two most popular are the current ratio and the acid test ratio, also called the quick ratio. The one in between, the net working capital, is not really a ratio. So it sort of gets thrown in with these others, but it's not a ratio. And these ratios use the balance sheet, so get the balance sheet out. So let's take a look at slide number 27, the current ratio. One of the more popular financial measures. Why? Because if a company can't pay payroll, if a company can't meet its, pay the rent and keep the lights on, meet its day-to-day operations, it's not a good thing, is it? No, it's not a good thing at all. And so what we do is we take the current assets and we divide them by the current liabilities. And the current ratio is a good indicator of how stable a company is. Anything over 1.0 is considered acceptable. If your current assets equal or exceed your current liabilities, you should be able to satisfy your short-term obligations without any problems. Obviously, the greater the number is, the better. But it gets to be ridiculous, for example, for several years with Microsoft. They had all this cash. Now it's Apple and a few other companies that just have all this cash coming out of their ears, way more than their current liabilities. So the current ratios were in the 70 and 80 and 90 range. Just ridiculous, but that was the nature of software and other high-tech companies. Their liabilities are not that great once everything has been done. They have to keep maintaining it, yes, of course, but how many more times can Microsoft write Word? Every time they do it, they make it worse. In my humble opinion, anyway, obviously the greater the number is, the better. And if we take a look at Walgreens, we find that the current ratio is about 1.234. That's what I got. Make sure you got the same. Who knows? I might have screwed up, because I have their current assets on the balance sheet as 10,670,000,000, and just use 10,670, cross out the last three zeros, and the current liabilities as 8,722,000,000, and if you divide current assets divided by current liabilities, you get 1.234. So can Walgreens, yes, Walgreens is in good shape, folks. They can make payroll. They can pay the rent. Slide number 28. The net working capital is not a ratio. It's an absolute dollar measure of liquidity. So it's the current ratio in a dollar measure. So it's not a ratio, and it gets thrown in with the other ratios, so we have to be careful. It's the current ratio in dollar terms. If the current ratio is greater than 1, that means the current assets are greater than the current liabilities. So the net working capital will be positive. There'll be excess dollars needed than current liabilities require. And if it's less than 1, then the net working capital would be negative, right? And of course, the more money you have, the better, until you get ridiculous and you got all this cash coming out of your ears. It's time to give back some to the shareholders. This statistic is less popular than the current ratio. It really is not a ratio, but is often discussed when discussing the current ratio and other liquidity ratios. And the last liquidity ratio is the acid test. Boy, doesn't that sound scary, how the acid test, or sometimes called the quick ratio. Well, it's really the same as the current ratio, except one major change. We exclude the inventory. Right? Unlike the current ratio, the acid test ratio excludes inventory. So there's a couple different ways you can compute it. You can add up all the other current assets, cash, accounts receivable, short-term investments, other current assets. Or you could take the current assets and just subtract inventory. Either way, I have the formula in the first way I just described, but you could do it the second way. You'll get the same answer. And why would you exclude inventory? Well, it depends on the industry. In the case of Walgreens, it's not a big deal. But let's read. This ratio measures the ability of the company to meet its short-term obligations even if its current inventory becomes obsolete or just out of fashion or spoiled or whatever, or undesirable, and hence difficult or impossible to be turned into cash. So anything greater than 1 is adequate. But you have to look at the industry. Are the items that Walgreens keeps in its inventory, are they going to go out of style? Pampers? Or formula milk? Maybe some drugs will expire, but that usually takes 2 or 3 years, and they usually go sell the stuff before that happens. So in the case of Walgreens, we really don't have to worry that much. And obviously, Walgreens doesn't worry that much, because if you take a look at their acid test ratio, if you subtract out the inventory from the current liabilities, and then you do the calculation, you wind up with 0.427. Is that right? I think that's right. Yeah, I think I did that right. I wound up with 3724. Make sure, because you know I make mistakes. 3724, which was the current assets minus the inventory, or you add up the cash and the accounts receivable and the short-term investments and the other current assets, and you wind up with 3724. You divide that by the current liabilities of 8722, and you only get 42.7%, 0.427, which is low by normal standards. But wait a minute, does Walgreens have to worry about their inventory going out of style? I mean, Band-Aids are Band-Aids, right? They're not going out of style. It's not some things, a few things, but no, they don't have to worry about that. So they're not so worried. Maybe other companies, computer company, right? If you have a computer that's 6 months old, oh my goodness. So Dell was the first company, not the only one, but they were the first one to really pioneer and make it very popular, this idea of you don't even build the item until somebody orders it. I mean, obviously you develop the item and then you make it available for sale, but they did not keep any inventory of their computers. And they probably still don't. They wait until the orders come in and then they put it together and ship it out. Yes, because a computer becomes obsolete immediately, right? Not Band-Aids. Okay, good. Let's turn our attention now to the activity ratios. Again, one of the ratios that Mr. Graham thought was important. And these are financial ratios that are used to measure how well the firm is managing its assets. Accounts receivable turnover, inventory turnover, total asset turnover. And these ratios use data from the balance sheet and the income statement. Activity ratios measure a firm's ability to convert different accounts within their balance sheets into cash or sales. And companies will try to turn their production into cash or sales as fast as possible because generally this will lead to higher revenues. So how fast are we turning over these items? Accounts receivable, inventory, total asset turnover. Now that might seem a little confusing at first, but as we take a look at some examples, I hope it makes sense. So let's turn to slide 31 and look at accounts receivable turnover, a measure of how accounts receivable are managed. Now, if you've taken accounting, you know what accounts receivable are. It's a fancy way of saying, who owes me how much, right? In the business world, it is just assumed that when you do business-to-business commerce, you're just going to extend credit to your customers. That's just the way things are done. Not always, but almost all the time. You send them the goods, and then you send them an invoice, and they pay you back in 30 days or 60 days. And so this turnover ratio is saying, okay, how fast are they bringing it back, right? How many days is it taking them to get it back to us? And it turns out that the higher the number, the better. It indicates the return a company is getting from its investment in accounts receivable. By maintaining accounts receivable, firms are indirectly extending interest-free loans to their clients. A high ratio implies that the company operates either on a cash basis or its extension of credit and collection of accounts receivable is efficient. In other words, they're getting the money quickly. A low ratio implies that the company should reassess its current policies in order to ensure the timely collection of imparted credit, not earning interest, for the firm. Or that just may be how the industry operates. In some industries, such as the defense industry, you know Uncle Sam is going to pay you what they owe you. They just take forever to do so. So their accounts receivable turnover is horrible. But that's the exception, not the norm. And when you do extend credit to your customers in business to business, you're not charging them interest. I mean, sometimes you'll see on the invoice, if you don't pay us within 90 days, we're going to start hitting you with 1.5% per month. But that's, you know, it's just a encourage people to pay the bill. So we look at Walgreens, and it turns out their accounts receivable is fine, folks. It's just fine, right? So you look at what is the accounts receivable? 2167, is that what you found? That's what I found. And you divide that into the total revenue, that top line number, 71 billion, 71633. And it turns out that they're turning over their accounts receivable 33 times. Yeah, no problem. They're getting their money quickly enough to make them more than less not worried about their people who owe them money paying them. So they're doing just fine in that account. So what's the inventory turnover? Well, that's a measure of how inventory is managed. And we looked at the accounts receivable. How are accounts receivable being managed? Well, how is the inventory managed on slide 32? You take the total revenue and you divide it by the inventory. The higher the number, the less time an item spends in inventory, and the better the return the company is able to earn from funds tied up in inventory. As with all ratios, this ratio must be compared against industry averages. A low turnover implies poor sales and therefore excess inventory. Do you want a lot of inventory on your hands? Not normally. A high inventory implies either strong sales or ineffective inventory buying and maintenance. You got to have something to sell. High inventory levels generally are unhealthy because they represent an investment with a rate of return of zero. Sure, the car dealerships love to have cars on their lots, but those cars aren't making them any money until they sell them. So it's a catch-22. You got to have cars or any kind of inventory to sell them, but you don't want to have that many because they're not making you any money. You want to get things in and out of the doors as quickly as possible. And having a high inventory also opens the company up to trouble in the case of falling prices or obsolete or undesirable products. Right. That's why you'll hear the car dealership say, "We got to get rid of last year's models. Quick, come on down. We're making deals." So let's do the inventory turnover for Walgreens. And it turns out the inventory is 7036, right? Did you find that number on the balance sheet? Divide that into the total revenue, 71633. And it turns out that Walgreens is turning over their inventory 10 times a year. 10 times a year, folks. So that means about every 5 weeks. Right, every 5 weeks or so, you walk into a Walgreens, and you and I, we walk in there and we just think, oh, this stuff has been there since the last time we were here. No, every 5 weeks, they are turning over all the stuff, always constantly stacking the shelves and turning over all that stuff in the store. Pretty interesting, right? Yeah. Now, some things turn over very quickly. The formula, the diapers, and then some things turn over fairly slowly. I have no idea how quickly the drugs in the back turn over, but I do know that formula turns over. Yeah, they can go through that stuff like crazy. Yes. Okay. Good. Now we would have to take a look at CVS's Rite Aid, and I can bet you that Walmart and Costco and Target turn over their inventory probably even faster than Walgreens. Slide number 33, total asset turnover. Well, this takes a look at the total assets of the company and sees how well we're managing these assets by dividing them into the total revenue. The total asset turnover ratio measures the firm's efficiency at using assets to support sales and revenue. And of course, the higher the number, the better. You gotta relate it to other companies in the industry. Companies with low profit margins tend to have high asset turnover. And those with high profit margins tend to have low asset turnover. What does that mean? Well, if you're selling milk, right, you're selling it quite a bit. You're selling a lot of milk. And if you're selling jet fighters, right, you're not selling that many, so you have to have a high profit margin. Make sense? And again, we would look at it in the context of other companies. So I calculated for Walgreens 2.14, because our total revenue was the 71633 that we've been using. And the total assets are quite a bit at $33,462,000,000, and it turns out our total asset turnover is a little over 2. So every year we go through the assets twice in terms of revenue. All right, so those were the activity ratios. The last group, the last group are the leverage ratios. And the leverage ratios are referring to our debt, because leverage is a fancy term for debt. And the idea, we'll discuss this later on, is that you are using other people's money to make your money. So I'm reading from the bottom of the slide now. You are using the borrowed money as a lever to increase your earnings. When one firm buys another firm using borrowed money, it is often referred to as a leveraged buyout. You are taking on debt to buy out the other company. And many people like debt. They as we said, you're using other people's money to make your money. And then others are worried about having too much debt, because you got to pay the debt and you got to pay the interest, or you wind up in bankruptcy court. Let's go back to the top of the slide now. Financial ratios that are used to measure the amount of debt being used to support operations and the ability of the firm to service its debt. So the debt-to-equity ratio, the times interest earns, and the debt payments to total assets. We use both the balance sheet and the income statement and/or the income statement. So let's take a look at slide 35. Debt-to-equity ratio. And this is one of the things we calculate in the financial planning class for family finances, for personal finances. But now we're doing the same thing for a corporation. A measure of a company's financial leverage calculated by dividing long-term debt by shareholders' equity. It indicates what proportion of equity and debt the company is using to finance its assets. So you take the long-term debt, and you got to know, at least in my case, that Walgreens is a company after my own heart. They have very little long-term debt. Up until just a few years ago, they had none. Literally no long-term debt. They just didn't believe in it. But with interest rates falling so low, they just scratched their head and said, well, why don't we take on some debt and expand the company? The interest is so cheap right now, it just makes sense for us to do so. And over the past few years, they've increased their long-term debt. A higher debt-to-equity ratio generally means that a company has been aggressive in financing its growth with debt. This can result in lower earnings. Why? Because as a result of additional interest expense. Sometimes investors only use interest-bearing long-term debt instead of total liabilities. I like using total liabilities, okay? Total long-term debt. The lower, in my humble opinion, the better. Other people might say, no, load up on debt. So there's that push and pull going on, that tug of war. Slide 36, times interest earned. This one was a favorite of Mr. Graham's. This measures the ability of a company to... I apologize. I did not calculate the... I did not tell you what I got for debt-to-equity ratio for Walgreens. I got 22.33%, which is pretty low, folks. It's on the low side. Some companies, it's much higher. So, and again, as a few years ago, it was just zero. So I apologize. Let's take a look at slide 36 now. The times interest earned. Very important, because it tells you how many times the company earns back its interest that it needs to pay. So you look at earnings before interest and taxes, and that's on the income statement. Make sure you can find that. I found 3,464 dollars in earnings before interest and taxes. And the interest expense, I mean, look at it. It's only $88 million. This is a company that does $71 billion of sales, and their interest expense is $88 million. I know to you and I, $88 million is a lot of money, but to them, it's nothing. And you do that, and you wind up with 39. So 39 times they earn back the amount of money they need to pay the interest for the year. So is Walgreens in danger of being hauled into bankruptcy court? No. every 8 days or so, every 9 days, a little bit more than once a week, they earned enough money to pay off their interest. So they're not in danger of ever being pulled into bankruptcy court. Times interest earned is used to determine how frequently interest payments are earned by the company during a year. The higher the better, obviously, and normally 3 or 4 is considered adequate. Walgreens is 39, so yeah, Walgreens is in great shape in that respect. And that's the kind of, that's me, I like my motto, make love, not loans. 37, total debt to total assets. This is a measure of how much of a company's total assets have been financed by debt. So you take the total liabilities, total debts, they mean the same thing, and you divide them by the total assets. Total debt to total assets includes both short-term and long-term debt and assets. So the debt-to-equity ratio is looking at long-term debt, right? This one looks at total debt. If it varies substantially from the debt-to-equity ratio, the company may be relying heavily on short-term debt. A heavy reliance on short-term debt may denote more risk. Think of it. It's as if a family were financing their operations of the family through credit cards. You're right, you can get yourself in a lot of trouble doing that. Yeah, definitely. And I calculated, what did I calculate? Total debt to total assets was 45.50%. That's still pretty good. You know, anything between 30 and 50% is in decent shape. And remembering that we don't have to worry about Walgreens inventory going out of style or obsolete anytime quickly. And that, dear students, was our discussion of financial statements and ratio analysis. Now, if you take a look at the assignment sheet, I ask you to do, I think, 12, do them all if you want, but do about 12 of these I gave you 5 companies, but you could choose your own companies. Make sure they're large companies, none of these little tiny, stock, penny stock, or even just micro cap stocks. We want to take a look at some serious companies that you may be interested in, or I give you some examples. And I want you to at least calculate a few. So I want you to do at least 2 or 3 from each category. Don't just look up the ones where you can look it up. I want you to do it a couple, okay? Do a couple of calculations. It's not hard. All right? And that is we are finished. When we come back in Chapter 7 of the 4th, 5th, and 6th edition, we will start to discuss stock price behavior and market efficiency and start looking at the sillier side of investing in stocks. See you in the next chapter.